In every life we have some trouble, but when you worry you make it double. Don't worry, be happy.
Do you worry often? If so, when and why? And are you worried about worrying? Do you try to do anything to control your worrying? Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. We will talk about why worrying is on the rise, why it can be a problem, and what we can do about it during this hour. But we'll also ask our guest if there is any upside to worrying. After all, how do you hope for the best and plan for the worst if you don't worry a little about what could go wrong? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Catherine Tristan, a research scientist on the faculty of Washington University School of Medicine. She is the author of the book, Why Worry? Stop Coping and Start Living. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for being with us.
It's my pleasure.
So this might seem like a simple question, but what exactly is worry?
Worry is a spectrum of a number of emotions. Basically, we're thinking about the future and wondering if it's the same as our expectations. And if it isn't, then we're thinking more about problem solving. And if it goes too wrong, then we can progress into anxiety. So worry, basically, the purpose of that is to try to find solutions.
So a little bit of worry doesn't sound so bad.
As a matter of fact, you need to be a worrier. That sort of goes against the grain, but the thing is, it's a matter of balance. Helpful kinds of worrying were built into our body. Over millions of years, we've had this emotion because it serves a purpose. When it's proactive and solution-oriented, helps us find helps us to problem solve. If it improves your situation, something's not working in your life, or it helps you handle a physical or emotional challenge, all those things are the real reason worry was built into our body and why it can help us.
Yeah, and this we were prompted to do this show in part because of a Wall Street Journal column that talked about some recent research that says, yes, while worrying has a purpose and can help in problem solving, for some people, worrying can become obsessive and overwhelming. And so we've got to, I guess, not cross that line.
Absolutely. There, you know, it is a fine line, and sometimes you step over this and you go back and forth, and so we're constantly walking on this tightrope, and worry ends up harming us when we're focusing more on those what's supposed to be problem-solving thoughts, but they become chronic negative thoughts. And then worry can harm us when we're focusing more on what is wrong or what could go wrong than what might be okay. And it can lead, as I said, into depression, anxiety, panic attacks. All those things are how well you are balancing the good types of worry versus the harmful types of worry.
Yeah. So you found yourself personally worrying too much at one time.
You know, I come from a long line of worriers, and my mother was a worrier, and I think her mother was a worrier, and a lot of us say, well, that's just who I am, and there's nothing I can do about it. But I found that it was beginning to interfere with my life, and I developed panic attacks when I was in college, studying for finals and thinking the worst possible things, but not ever being aware of that. So I spent many years dealing with anxiety, worry, panic, and even though I'm a scientist and know better, it still was right there in my life until I figured out sort of my eureka moment was that worry is a choice. I was making a choice, and so I could choose to respond and react in other ways. And so, yes, I finally overcame that problem.
Yeah. And you think, though, that worrying is on the rise?
Oh, for sure worrying is on the rise. In fact, I was talking to my son yesterday, and he was saying, you know, it's incredible how many of my friends on Facebook always are talking about the worried about this, the worried about that. Worry has always been part of our culture, but in particular lately, it seems like it's skyrocketed. And I mean, there are even studies that show it's reaching its tentacles into more aspects of society. A recent study of more than 200,000 incoming college freshmen shows all time low levels of emotional and mental well-being. And it's a 25-year study every year for 25 years, and it's been going downward. And this year has been the worst year. So it's going to our young and then spread to a lot of people who normally aren't big worriers. Yes, it's becoming more and more of a problem.
Yeah. So interesting. Is that due to... I don't want to get into a huge political discussion here, but divisive politics and stressful issues in the world, or lack of coping skills, or all of the above?
I would say yes, all of the above. You really hit the nail on the head, because, you know, it's a culmination of things in our society. Things just seem to be moving faster. We've got our phones, we are constantly on it, we're constantly in communication, so we know exactly what's wrong. And so we find things out more quickly. There are more stresses placed upon our time now. Certainly the change in the administration has been met with a lot of uncertainties. No matter what side of the political spectrum you're on, there are things that are just uncertain financially, and people just don't quite know. And so, yes, it's a lot of different reasons and lack of coping skills. You bet. We are not really taught that in school. It's something that probably should be part of our curriculum, but your coping skills are pretty much just you're on your own, and whatever your family did is most likely what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, I know that you wrote a whole book on it, but when you say worrying is a choice and you can choose not to worry, that sounds easier said than done.
It's totally easier said than done. But here's the thing. When we're talking about coping skills like that, it's not something that you just say and then do. It's a skill that you practice and you work on. And there's a new field in science called epigenetics. And what epigenetics says is that a lot of us say, well, my whole family's like that. It's you know, I just am what I am. But the thing is, it's a matter that your genes do help control your emotional state and how you respond. But epigenetics tells us that it's what turns the genes off or on, and that you can actually reprogram your DNA to react differently. And how do you do that? You do that by reacting differently until it becomes a habit. So it's not something that happens overnight, but it's something if you work on, you try to look at what I call possibilities or possibilize instead of terrible eyes, or look at all the catastrophes over time, that will help transition you into a better mindset. But you do have to train yourself.
Interesting. Can you give us a real practical example of this? And I'll say, all right, we're looking at TV and we hear a news story that just makes our blood pressure boil, and we're like, oh my gosh, the world's coming to an end. I'm going to worry about this now. How can I not react that way?
Well, You can never not react the way you're going to react, but what you can do is make changes the next time. Maybe I find myself watching less of newscasts, or at least the ones that present only the negatives. Mm-hmm. And so you don't not react, but what you do is you catch yourself. If it's starting to affect you, if you're watching newscasts and you're fine, it's the same, then just go ahead and be that way. But if you're getting too emotionally invested, then back off of that and watch something or do something that actually speaks more to what makes you happier. If you find yourself going over the deep end, find something that you really love to do and do that. Volunteer someplace. Change what you say to yourself. And what you do is by changing your thoughts and changing your reactions, focusing more consciously instead of remaining on your autopilot, that's how you can make some changes. But it doesn't just happen automatically. You're absolutely right. You don't just not think something. You try to think something else. You replace it with a different thought.
We are talking with Catherine Tristan. She's a research scientist on the faculty of Washington University School of Medicine. She is the author of the book, Why Worry? Stop Coping and Start Living. And we are talking about worry and how we can control our worry. Are you a worry wart or the opposite? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We'll have our guests react to a couple of Facebook comments when we come back from news. Pam on Facebook writes, "Yep, I'm a major worrier. It just gets me stressed, but I can't stop. Some days I can let it go, but other days it freaks me out." So we'll talk a little bit about that. And Brandon on Facebook, though, says, "I never worry. It's pointless. If you worry and nothing happens, you just got worked up for nothing." So what about you? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll check news and then we'll be back. This is the Ideas Network. Don't you worry about a thing. We are talking about worrying, talking about how it can be destructive and what it does to us and what we can do about it, especially if it becomes chronic or obsessive. 1-800-642-1234 is the number to call if you have a question for our guest expert or maybe an experience to share. You can also email us, ideas@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Our guest is Catherine Tristan, who is the author of the book, Why Worry? Stop Coping and Start Living. And I had mentioned before our news break, a couple of listeners on Facebook who had totally different reactions to our question about whether they worry a lot or not. Brandon on Facebook says, "I never worry. It's pointless. If you worry and nothing happens, you just got worked up for nothing. If you worry and terrible things happen, you're just that much farther along. Either things will happen or they won't." Catherine, what do you think of that that attitude?
I think that is a healthy attitude to have. A lot of us do not have that attitude, but I have to remember, it's kind of funny, I once was giving a talk at a book signing, and this big burly guy comes over, he came to my talk, and I thought, oh, that's nice. And so afterwards he came over, and he said, "You know, I never worry." And I thought, well, that's great, but I wonder why he's talking to me about it. But he said, "But I wake up at night, and I can't go back to sleep. Is that normal?" And so I thought, you know what? A lot of us handle worry very well, but a lot of us just stuff it, and it will come out. And so I think it's always a balancing act, but even when you say you're not a worrier, sometimes you actually are.
Yeah, I believe it. So what are some of the symptoms, like that insomnia or waking up in the middle of the night of maybe worrying too much?
A lot of times it's basically knowing, you know, what's helping me and what isn't helping me. But a lot of us, as I said, are on autopilot. It's just the way we do things, the way we've done things. But if you change nothing, nothing's going to change, right? So a lot of times you can recognize maybe you're over worrying about something. The number one thing is, of course, sleeping. If we stress before we go to bed, worst time to think about your problems is right before you go to bed or when you first wake up. But it's the natural time our bodies really get us to start thinking, unfortunately. Maybe you're overeating or under-eating, a lot of us just grab that Twinkie instead of an orange, yeah, or something, and it just because we're stressed and worried. Maybe you're crabby and fly off the handle. By recognizing, you know, when am I just getting a little too tight on worry, then you can start reacting better about it. And part of that is just really talking to yourself and saying, you know what, I know I'm worrying about this, but it's possible that this isn't going to be the worst possible thing to happen to me. And then try to possibilize. Look at positive possibilities. What could actually go right? What a unique thought that is. Things could actually work out. And even when they don't work out, sometimes they act as stepping stones. So a lot of it is dealing with yourself, changing your attitude, changing your thoughts, being forgiving of yourself because you're such a perfectionist and angry or blaming people, but just kind of backing off on that and just knowing that really you're probably doing the best that you can.
That is, you just sounded so familiar, Catherine. Maybe not getting enough sleep, being crabby and grabbing that donut instead of something, an apple. That is hilarious. That just described me in many ways. And I did take your worry wart quiz, by the way, that was on your, you have a, it on your website. And we did put that on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page if people want to take that quiz. I did it kind of quickly, and I guess I wasn't really, really thinking very carefully about every single answer. Here I am worrying about it. I ended up being on the borderline, just one over from hardly worrying to moderate worrier. So should I be concerned about that?
You should be worried, Joy.
Yeah.
No, so this, the purpose of the quiz really is to start the inner dialogue. Am I a worrier? Let me mm-hmm. think about that. Let me be aware that the most powerful thing you can do, there are two most powerful things you can do. Become aware and choose. Awareness and choice are your two most powerful allies in trying not to be a worrier. So these were just ways to kind of self-assess. How am I? What's my mental state? And so if you're a little bit over, that's okay. Take it next week or actually start working on yourself, whether or not, no matter what your score is. And do you wake up feeling grateful? Do you find things to be grateful for? A lot of worry is negative biochemistry in your body. A little bit is fine, then it dissipates. But if you're a worrier, you tend to produce sort of these stress chemicals in your body. And a great way to counteract that is to find things you are actually grateful for. And those types of feelings are different type of biochemistry. And so you can change actually how you think by doing things better for your body. Of course, eating the fruit instead of the donut, but once in a while that donut is just fine. Or those Girl Scout cookies, which we're getting. So, it's okay to treat yourself. But learn to be grateful, learn to focus on positive outcomes, and learn to breathe. I mean, I find myself wiggling my shoulders a lot during the day and just taking deep breaths because I'm aware I can tense up that way. So awareness of how you're thinking and how your body is reacting, those are really important points.
Well, I am grateful for our listeners who have been patient as we talk about worrying with Catherine Tristan, who is the author of the book, Why Worry? Stop Coping and Start Living. And I'm sorry to say, though, that Carolyn Grafton dropped off her question, and I'm going to try to paraphrase it. She is worried and is stressed over political division in her own family. So there's a lot of arguing going on in her own family. Without going into, exactly what's going on there, do you have any thoughts as to how Carol can cope with that kind of a situation?
Well, I find myself in the same position. Mm-hmm. So I have a son who's a staunch Republican, and then I have a daughter who's a staunch Democrat. And they're not so much just the party lines, but the philosophy lines that maybe we're kind of thinking of that. And what am I? I'm tending to be a moderate. And because guess what? That's why I wrote the book, is Learning to Moderate. So if she's worried about a lot of political divisions, my suggestion is to let the people be who they are. Let my son be a Republican. That's fine. That's who he is. Let my daughter be a Democrat. Let her more of a liberal, him more conservative. Why do I need them to think the same way that I think? And, of course, we know we're right and they're wrong, but, we won't go there. Let's just say let them be who they are and talk less about politics and more about kids, the grandkids, if they're grandkids, talk more about what is going on in their lives than in their politics. So part of it is that we're never going to change people the way we want them to be. We have to accept them for who they are, but let's learn what caused the triggers that caused the negativity and go to a different place.
Next, we go to Marcus in Milwaukee. Hi, Marcus.
Hi, Joy. How are you?
I'm good. Are you worrying about anything right now?
Not so much.
Mm-hmm. What's your strategy?
Well, my grandfather gave me three quotes, which I really try to live by. two of them, I believe, were his own, and then one of them was from William James, the psychologist and philosopher. The William James one is, human beings, by changing the inner attitudes of their minds, can change the outer aspects of their lives. The one that he said was, and it you actually made me think of it when you said about stepping stones. You know, he said, when an object appears in, you know, an obstacle appears in your path, you have a choice. You can use it as a stepping stone or a stumbling block, but the choice is entirely your own. And then the third one he said to me, and I was probably about 9, 10 when he told me, and I kind of took it the wrong way, and as I aged, I understood. He said, either you'll live or you'll die. Either way, you're going to be all right.
Oh. Well, I suppose he's got a point there. Well, interesting, Marcus. So you kind of live by these quotes, and that helps you worry less?
Yeah, I... Like you've discussed already, worrying, it doesn't do anything for you. It actually makes the situation worse because you get yourself worked up a lot of times over nothing. You know? I think back to Y2K, and you know, that was a whole lot of nothing, but there's a whole lot of buildup to it, and everybody was worried about what was going to happen. And that was just one of the experiences in my younger life. And you know, I just learned at that point, you know, like, worrying isn't going to change it. So, you know,
yeah. Thank you for sharing, Marcus. Catherine, a reaction to Marcus's philosophy.
Marcus, let's go on tour together. Get this message out.
Okay.
No, I love, wow, what a great grandfather. And that's the other thing I think it would be a good message, is that if once you learn to deal with things and to see things from a higher perspective, and you can pass that on, whether it's your friends, your kids, your grandkids. You can be a source of wisdom and help as opposed to a source of strife. And I love quotes. One of the quotes that I like is it's a Chinese proverb, and it says that the birds of worry and care fly over your head. This you cannot change, but that they build nests in your hair, this you can't prevent. So I love quotes, and I love what Marcus offered us as those great thoughts that, in a nutshell, tell us how we can live better.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Marcus, for the call. You know, it might be easier for me to go get a massage or you know, start a gratitude journal to try to worry less. But I'm in a pretty comfortable position. I've got a good job, and I've got a good family, and I've got great coworkers and a good job. Some people, though, you know, they might be worrying about not knowing where the next meal is coming from, or whether, you know, living in a violent situation, or maybe they're going to get deported from this country. I mean, I'm just saying all sorts of different examples that it's a lot harder for someone in that position to not worry.
Absolutely. And this is almost when you use worry when you have difficult situations like that to try to help you. If you're, you know, your checking account is slim, if you're running out of money or there's a health issue, you don't say, hey, don't worry, everything right. will be fine, because it's very possible things will not be fine. Things don't always turn out well. And so you try to prepare for that, but you can't always prepare for that. But what you can do is learn to weigh your options. If you're having some money problems, talk to someone who's in money who might be able to help you. Learn to have a budget, cut costs. And so that way, worry can trigger you to act proactively. And then I also think, remind yourself, this is a big one, you're not the only one who ever lost their job, whoever was stilted, whoever was hurt, or whoever just lost a loved one. Those are very serious challenges, but other people have dealt with that as well. It's something that we go through, but you aren't the only one. You don't have to feel so isolated. And the other thing is, learn to dig down deep and pull out that buried spirit that's inside of you, the part of you that loves life and knows that everything will be okay one way or the other. When we tap into our buried spirit, you know, it's body, mind, spirit. A lot of times we forget that aspect of ourselves. But, you know, there's an older book by Viktor Frankl called Man's Search for Meaning. This is a man who was stripped of everything and put in a concentration camp by the Nazis, but he refused to give in. He said he would give his last crumb to the person next to him who was hungry. I think the ultimate power that we have when life seems to overpower us is the power to choose how you want to think and react, even in the worst of situations. So there are positive, there are things that you can do for yourself, like the massage joy that you said, or like the nice warm bath, trying to keep a positive perspective. But also reach down and pull out that buried inner spirit that's within all of us, and see how that connection can also help us cope and deal with life as it is.
Our guest is Catherine Tristan. She is the author of Why Worry? Start Coping and Start Living. She is a research scientist on the faculty of Washington University School of Medicine. 1-800-642-1234 is our number if you have a question for her about worrying and how to cope with worrying. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. You know, I shared a tweet earlier from Pam on Facebook who says, yep, major worrier. It just gets me stressed, but I can't stop. She mentions that some days she can let it go, but others, it freaks me out. So any advice for that person who knows that they are a major worrier and it actually to the point where it freaks them out, Catherine?
Absolutely. And you know what? A lot of times that for the true worriers, and we're a select group, let's face it, then we are upset and it does bother us. And sometimes, as you pointed out earlier in the show, we're worried that we're worried.
Yeah.
And so to how to strike that balance. This is a little, there are two things that I'll tell you. One is I call the stop, look, and listen method. When I hear my mind going into that conveyor belt of negative thoughts, I put the brakes on that baby as soon as I can, and I just think, stop, look, and listen. Stop just tells me, be aware, and let's stop that line that is continuing to go. Let's just stop the thought process that's going all into negativity right now. Stop. And then look. I look around. You know, a lot of times we have this tunnel vision and we're worried and we're not even sure where we are. I look around and look what else is happening in the world. Maybe if I can, I'm going to put myself into a more natural setting, you know, trees, and go out and step on the ground and connect with Mother Nature. Or even if you're in a bus, you know, look around at other people, stop that train of negative emotion, and listen. And what I mean by this is listen to more compassionate dialogue for yourself. If you're beating yourself up for having done something, change that dialogue. I did my best. It's going to have to stay at that. Or if it's like, this is never going to get better, you say, you don't know that it's never going to get better. So say more compassionate thoughts to yourself and more positive things or positive possibilities. Stop, look, and listen. Boom. You know, that doesn't have to take a long time. Now, here's my suggestion for Pam and anybody else who's those, yep, I'm a worrier kind of people. When you wake up in the morning, or better, before you go to bed at night, do something I call the 5-minute mental marinade. Takes 5 minutes or less. As you're lying down, cross your hands over your heart. Take about 5 deep breaths. Now, think of something that you like. Think of things that bring you pleasant thoughts. Take 5 more deep thoughts. Now let's crank that up, ramp that up just a little bit. Now think of someone that you love, something that you love to do. Think of a pet, your grandkids. Think of fishing, whatever it is that really makes you feel good. And focus on that for a minute or two. Focus, really, feel the feeling, see it in your head. Drive all those positive feelings that you have into your conscious mind. And now take 5 more deep breaths. And then just slowly stop, and then you can see how much you'll have changed your mind instead of focusing on that during the day.
Let me, we'll finish after the news. We're talking about why we worry and what we can do about it, whether it's bad for us or not. And we are welcoming your questions. We're welcoming your experiences. Do you consider yourself a worrywart? Or do you never worry? Or worry very little? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Catherine Tristan, a research scientist on the faculty of Washington University School of Medicine. She is the author of the book, Why Worry? Stop Coping and Start Living. We were, you know, I realized that maybe it's an obvious question, but that song just prompted me. Why do we worry? Why do we worry, Catherine?
We worry because we have problems, and we worry because those problems sometimes interfere with our expectations. And I think it's like running into a wall. Like, I don't expect that wall to be there, but it is there, so boom, I hit it. Now, if you worry about it, maybe you will stop running before you hit the wall. So it's always a combination of life as it is versus life as we want it to be.
Yeah. Well, here, and Victoria just emailed something that it was going through my mind. She says, I think as a caring person, I confuse worry with caring. I worry because I care. I care about my family, my community, my country, the environment. She goes on to say that the new administration has me over the edge. I write letters, but what else can I do except worry when they are making such catastrophic moves? So is there a connection between worrying and caring?
A lot of times the people who worry too much equate that with caring too much. And you do care, and you are emotional, and you want things to be better, and you find them being worse. And so, yes, you do care. But the balance is that when is it harming you versus helping you? A caring, empathetic person is a wonderful person in life that helps us and helps others. But if they're not helping themselves, they need to focus on themselves first. Because if you don't care and take care of your own issues, then you can't really help other people as well and as authentically. But yes, she's sensitive and a person who's very loving, but you can also get caught up in your own worries. I think you need to focus more on what can I do, and letting, you know, helping people, but letting them live their lives. But if you have political differences in the administration, then yes, by all means, voice them, send letters. But don't go to bed at night all disturbed by the fact that in the way things are. Learn to do what you can do, and then learn to sort of accept things that you can't change.
One of my habits is, and I will admit to this, and it's not in a political sense at all, but I always want to make sure everything goes okay for everyone. Say, planning a family get together, and I'm so worried about, will everything be fine, and are we going to have the right foods for everybody, and will there be fun and games for the kids and adults alike? You know, that kind of stuff. I mean, and I guess in a way, it's just planning, but it's also worrying.
And yes, it's both. And part of that is the biological need to worry because you need to think ahead to avoid problems. And so that's exactly what you're doing, and you're trying to keep that delicate balance. And I'm just reminded of I went to dinner for my granddaughter's birthday, and my son was saying he's getting all stressed out. They're planning a vacation in England. He wants to know exactly what day they're going to do what and make sure that, you know, that's all prearranged. And my daughter-in-law says, his wife, we'll get there, we'll figure it out. So between the two of them, there's probably the right answer. You know, a little bit of planning, but not stressed out planning. And then fly by the seat of your pants. We tend to do that okay, even though we think we won't. And a lot of times when things are unplanned, they turn out just fine anyway. So this is the delicate balance between the two of those.
That's so funny, because I'm the vacation planner, and I usually like schedule every minute. And finally, my husband of 31 years said, you know, it would be all right to have an unscheduled vacation day. And so now we do.
They work out. Yeah. They work out. I don't know. It's a mystery.
That's right. You can find, you know, all sorts of fun, surprising adventures when you don't have everything.
By being spontaneous,
yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And we don't have to fear spontaneity. It actually can work for us, in our favor. Not every single time, though. That's what we worry about.
Yeah. Oliver tweeted, is there a scientific explanation for why worrying seems so intense when one wakes up in the middle of the night?
Boy, I tell you, if we could just get around that, we would be so much better. I used to think nighttime is fright time. Mm-hmm. And the thing about waking up in the middle of the night, if you have worries, they're going to slam you in the middle of the night. There are no distractions to keep you, you know, changing your what you're not thinking about or take your mind off of it. And also, very practically, a lot of times we're low blood sugar in the middle of the night, and low blood sugar can mimic symptoms of anxiety. So part of what we deal with is learn to deal with things during the day as best you can. Don't go to bed in a stressed out state. That also helps. But if you also wake up and you know you're frightened, get up and move for a little bit. Maybe have a banana and some milk. Those contain tryptophan, which is an amino acid that can help us relax more. I mean, foods do what we eat does make a difference. So, you know, something to eat, a cracker, some bananas. And deal with your anxiety during the day too. That what your mind wants is solutions and information, and sometimes we can give it to it, and sometimes we just have to deal with the fact that we can't.
We'll go to the phones and take our next caller, Mary Lou in Wauwatosa. Hi, Mary Lou.
Hi, hello. Thank you. What a wonderful program you're having. What I do when I'm anxious, I always try to have something holy around me, a holy medal. Anything holy helps me, and a great big piece of chocolate, especially the one with the strawberry inside. You forget everything when you bite into that. Oh,
I love it, Mary Lou. That is great. But so she has a holy piece of some sort, and eating candy, you know, in a way that eating that big chocolate is a coping mechanism of sorts. Catherine, I'm not sure you'd think it's the best coping mechanism.
I have chocolate.
Oh, you do.
I keep chocolate near at all times. And if you make it dark chocolate, it's heart healthy.
Yeah, that's true.
So, yes, that's the chocolate helps. I think that is maybe the undiscovered secret to all of worrying. Just don't overdo the chocolate, and then you get sick or way too much. So I think it's the delicate balance between knowing, you know, how to deal with yourself, which is ultimately what we're dealing with. We're dealing with ourselves, and how to develop a philosophy of more confidence. I'll handle it. It's one of the things that I say when I have something that I can't control. I can't control that. All I can do is sort of pat myself on the back, act as my own best friend, and say, we've handled it things before. We'll handle it now. I'll handle it. And in the face of things that are difficult to deal with, that is one of the things you can just do to help yourself.
Ian on Facebook says, the study of neuroscience shows that worry is based on old thoughts about what is happening now. Thoughts produce physical changes in the body called feelings. These feelings go to enforce the worrying thought, and the cycle continues. What do you make of that theory?
Good for you, Anne, for looking at the science of it, because it's not just voodoo that's out there. We do have old thoughts. We're programmed, you know, early in our life, how we're going to react. We also have genes that put us in to be more worriers or less worriers, and old thoughts and feelings. But here's the deal with the science that Anne is talking about is neuroplasticity. That's another area of science besides the epigenetics that we talked about, training your genes, which you can do. You can also train your mind. Mind is wonderfully plastic. We used to think it was sort of set in stone, but now that we know that old thoughts can be changed by new thoughts. New thoughts will rewire our brain. New ways of reacting will rewire our brain into more productive ways of coping. So yes, old thoughts can do that. That's autopilot. But new thoughts can help us by using neuroplasticity, the natural process of the brain. We can reprogram ourselves to react better, to feel happier. So, yes, old thoughts can be changed to newer thoughts.
And, Catherine, as we're running short of time, what is the, do you have an instant fix for worrying?
Yes, don't. No. So the, you know, the instant fix, I'll give you three quickies. Keep a positive perspective. Counter the thoughts that are telling you it's never going to be better. Studies show 85% of what we worry about never happens, 85%. Learn to live in the present moment. Focus on now. Now you're probably fine. Your power is in the present. And go to bed at night in a peaceful mindset, not stressing. Focus on that.
Wonderful. We have another minute to go. Is there a parting thought you have on worrying and how we can stop coping and start living?
Yes, I would say, as I said, learn to deal with yourself. You deal with yourself physically. You know, learn to breathe. Deep breathing can be an instant stress buster. Learn to say calming phrases. Mine is, this too shall pass. That was my mother's also. She had five kids. She used that a lot. I heard it a lot. Learn to say things that help you. Go out and connect with Mother Nature. That is instantly soothing for many of us. And sometimes, just do something for yourself. I say, you know, cut class or take a mental health day to yourself. Focus on how you can help yourself feel better.
This has been very, very, I guess, stress relieving. Thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Catherine Tristan is a research scientist in the on the faculty of the Washington University School of Medicine. She is the author of the book, Why Worry, Stop Coping, and Start Living. Thanks to Naisha Ellison for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come. We are going to talk politics coming up in our next hour, so maybe that might produce a little more stress. But then after 8 o'clock, it's On Your Money with Kevin McKinley. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Get home.